Bright lines curve across bright colors, forming a logo and scape. Words appear. Love Nightclub, Washington, D.C., January 20th, 2009. Inauguration day of President Barack Obama. Young Jeezy holds a microphone next to Jay-Z.
The show of love, I'll never forget it.
A lot of people right now, the people of the Barack Obama campaign, just everybody who helped get everything, everybody who's out in the street getting votes and all that shit.
Jeezy watches the footage on the TV.
It was so much energy, you would have thought we all won. It was electrifying. It's our moment. We, you know, our guys in the White House, and I do my verse. You know, club goes crazy, and then I pass the mic to Jay-Z.
See, anybody
people in the crowd reach out toward Jay-Z.
I feel like it helped him become the first black president, because when you connect hip-hop culture and our movement to that movement he had, I feel like it was set up to win. You know what I'm saying? It was already written.
Hip-hop speaks truth to power. The president of the United States of America is the power. This is the story of how hip-hop got the power.
We know Donald Trump ain't hurting, you know what I'm saying?
Well, Reagan's the father of crack cocaine as far as we're concerned.
President Obama said, wow, we really keeping it real here.
To tell you the truth, I believe that Clinton liked hip hop.
When Little Bush was around.
Call me racist.
In 2020, Obama put me on his summer playlist.
I'm still the only president to listen to Jay-Z's music in the Oval Office.
Donald Trump, like, he's a real nigga because he's unapologetic.
We got Kanye in the White House saying free Larry Hoover.
Can we affect the policy? There's a lot of people come in that room and do nothing in that room.
The letter from the White House is more crazy than Donald Trump here to soul.
This is hip hop in the White House. Let's get it.
A title, Hip Hop and the White House, Inauguration of Reagan.
And now, to present the excitement of youth, the sights and the sounds of a big city, here are New York City Breakers.
1970s, Grandmaster Caz.
Hip-hop has been connected to presidents from the jump. The culture was created 50 years ago by DJs, breakers, graffiti artists, and rappers responding to a life of oppression. This environment was the result of policies that came straight out of the White House.
So I lived in different sections of the Bronx growing up all of my life, playing in empty lots, you know, just with rubble all around, bouncing on mattresses. I mean, it was what it was. We didn't know what was behind us being there until later on.
I remember when Jimmy Carter came to the Bronx, it was a big deal. What preceded it? That was Gerald Ford, who was the president, who basically told New York City to kick rocks when we were going through our financial hardships in the 70s. And he said, we're not gonna bail out New York. That had a direct correlation to the conditions that would lead rise to hip hop. Prior to that was Richard Nixon, who started a war on drugs. So those conditions of oppression that was coming from the highest office of the land.
But real hip hop was always about doing our own thing within our own community. You're gonna give us garbage, we're gonna turn it into $1 billion something. That was always the attitude.
Hip hop has always been political because of the context in which it was created.
1980s, grinning, Reagan shakes hands with supporters.
When President Reagan took office in January 1981, I was just a baby growing up in Georgia. I didn't know anything about Reaganomics. That was Reagan's budget policy that slashed funding to poor neighborhoods and gave tax breaks to the wealthy.
when President Reagan would come on television and say things like, we're gonna cut this budget and cut that budget, people don't realize that the very next day, something happened, meaning something was missing from your community. And we could see it happening in real time.
My fellow citizens, the matter that brings me before you today is a grave one and concerns my most solemn duty as president. It is the cause of freedom in Central America and the national security of the United States.
There was a storm brewing. It was a political storm, and I just didn't have any idea what it was going to be until I saw the effects of it. We was expecting for it to be rain, but crack rained down, and that was the storm that was coming.
The crack cocaine epidemic hit America during Reagan's presidency, but there were some things none of us understood at the time. Reagan administration officials knew Central American drug traffickers were importing cocaine into our neighborhoods. Why didn't Reagan's government stop these drugs from coming in? Because the sales were funding military conflicts that the Reagan administration was supporting. Imagine that.
Just like Oliver North introduced us to cocaine in the 80s when them bricks came on military planes.
So I wrote a series of stories entitled Dark Alliance, which was about CIA involvement in drug trafficking. What my story showed was that the cocaine that was being sold in those neighborhoods was coming from mainly one source, and this one source was being used to finance a guerrilla war in Central America.
What I discovered was that some of this was known about by the CIA and maybe the DA and others.
Now all of a sudden there was this new thing running around called crack. It wouldn't be for years that we actually got it confirmed that Reagan and the CIA and his war to fund the war was the reason why that happened.
Well, Reagan's the father of crack cocaine, as far as we're concerned. The whole Iran-Contra, Oliver North, the whole weapons, the coke, the whole thing.
Crack blew up, and so did hip-hop at the same exact time. They actually grew up together.
Hip-hop grew out of the crack era. All of that is a part of hip-hop's real and actual history, which makes Ronald Reagan part of hip-hop's real and natural history.
Daddy-O.
The way I see Reagan connected to hip-hop is giving us something to rap about. Because of the influx of these drugs, because of what's going on in those communities, you know, you get records like The Message.
Rats in the front room, roaches in the back, junkies in the alley with that baseball bat.
I have a bum education, double-digit inflation, can't take the train to the job, there's a strike at the station.
Don't push me, 'cause I'm close. This is describing oppression, straight up and down. Somebody's speaking our plight. Somebody's giving us our existence. Somebody understands what we're going through.
It's like a jungle sometimes.
Grandmaster Melly Mel.
Life is hard. I mean, for the average person, life is extra hard. And the message tapped into that emotion. And I think that's the politic behind it, you know, is a real life emotion. Even, you know, throughout my whole life, you could see where something is wrong in politics, you know, you could figure out where the scam is, you know what I mean?
After his re-election, Reagan brought the New York City Breakers to perform at his inauguration. The first official contact between hip-hop and the White House.
Reagan claps as the breakdancers bow.
It's not Reagan loving hip-hop. You can't tell me it's Reagan loving hip-hop, but it's a political move.
The fact that it's being used or exploited in a way, it's like a give and take. All right, you use me, I use you.
Police storm a building.
Our neighborhoods continue to suffer through Reagan's second term, and hip-hop narrated the whole drama. Too Short, Ice-T, Toddy T, Public Enemy, those are just a few rappers who reveal what Reagan's so-called war on drugs did to the places where hip-hop lived. Then came a record that changed the whole game. I was 11 when I heard it. It went a little something like this.
Searching my car, looking for the product. Thinking every nigga is selling narcotics.
The year was 1988. The group was N.W.A. Dr. Dre, Ice Cube, MC Ren, DJ Yella, and a dope dealer named Eazy-E.
While I'm driving off laughing, this is what I'll say. Fuck the police.
Hip-hop and its relationships with the White House would never be the same.
When I heard it, And then there was so much talk about it, I just thought it was a revelation that had taken place. And that's what a lot of people were thinking. They just didn't have the nerve to say it. It was political because the police have been thought of as the saviors that keep the communities safe and secure. And they were untouchable in terms of criticism. For him to have the courage to say, F the police, was new, different, and exciting.
Maxine Waters, U.S. Congresswoman, 1990s.
It wasn't exciting to the federal government. Reagan's vice president, George H.W. Bush, was elected to replace him in the White House. The FBI sent the group a threatening letter, and then Eazy-E pulled a real gangster move.
He's not a presidential advisor yet, but his rap has gained him entry to the Republican elite.
You might not have guessed that Eazy-E, Eric Wright is his real name, would be among this group of well-off Republicans who paid $1,250 to become members of something called the Republican Inner Circle, who were waiting in line today to hear Law and Order man George Bush at a private members-only reception.
In the scheme of presidential politics, I think Eazy-E rests in a place of, he's a precedent. He is an early stage of our political awareness. He does hold the title of being one of the first, if not the first, a major rap figure to engage with the White House in this kind of meaningful way.
That means that we're in there. That means that we have definitely broken down barriers and walls. You're only placed in certain rooms by the influence that you hold. It's not you, the one person that's in the room that they're allowing. They're allowing everyone that's associated with you, that listens to you, that follows you in the room at that point.
But you gotta also ask, what did he get out of it? Did hip hop win with anything with that? Did we gain anything?
That's a fair question. There's one thing that hip hop gained for sure, the attention of a young governor with his eyes on the White House.
Some Americans were completely shocked at the verdict in the Rodney King case and the violence which followed. At least 9 people dead, more than 400 injured, nearly 1,000 in jail.
There was no justice in America today. And I'm glad they showed it to the world.
1992, reporters hold microphones toward advancing cops. Protesters topple a stand. Shoplifters flee a store. Fires burn.
Let me set the scene. It was 1992. Bill Clinton was running for president as a Democrat. He wanted to send a message to moderate white voters that he was a safe choice. So he went to Reverend Jesse Jackson and his Rainbow Coalition conference and decided to criticize a young black rapper and activist.
You had a rap singer here last night named Sister Soulja. I defend her right to express herself through music. But her comments before and after Los Angeles were filled with the kind of hatred that you do not honor today and tonight.
Many people believe Clinton took Soulja's statements out of context.
He too wanted to capture some of those people who thought that there was some danger in the hip-hop community with rappers, with young black people who were denouncing them.
He was a brilliant politician in understanding the need to triangulate among the different constituencies in America. So he was more than willing to throw young black folks under the bus in order to make people feel more secure who already had a bias against young black people.
The rap singer Governor Clinton had criticized last weekend rapped back.
Considerable time has been spent debating whether America should take seriously the words of a rap artist or so-called entertainers. Let me clarify for the press now who I am. I am Sister Soulja, Sony Epic rapper, activist, organizer, and lecturer. I have spoken on the same platform with Jesse Jackson, Minister Louis Farrakhan, Reverend Ben Chavis, Reverend Dr. Calvin Butts, and Nelson Mandela. As you can see, I am no newcomer to the world of politics and movement.
I met Sister Soulja at Howard University, 88, 89, around that time. Yeah, I traveled around the country with her and spoke at schools and jails and other things like that, so we became really close. Obviously, she was incensed by this, but she also was like smart and strategic enough to understand what this was about. and wanted to respond to it in a way that she thought would have impact.
I stand before you today feeling very confident, steadfast, and powerful. At the same time, I am surprised that as a young African woman, I have impacted and effected the development of not only national politics, but international politics as well.
Just really articulating how powerful we have become as a hip-hop community, that the President of the United States would feel that he could gain something by attacking this movement at that time. Like, she just boom, and she's smarter than him.
You're not gonna be able to come back from this, bro. Not with her.
But Clinton did come back. His tactics helped him get elected president 5 months later. Then he invited LL Cool J to perform at his inauguration.
Farai Chidea.
I remember all the girls having a crush on LL when I was in middle school. And he was smart, sexy, and ambitious. And I think when he took the stage, he understood that this was going to broaden his audience. So instead of Clinton triangulating him, he was triangulating on the Clintons.
That was an incredible transition for us. Not only are we in the White House, but now we are part of the White House, especially on its biggest day, on its biggest stage, on the hugest platform.
Roxanne Shanté, Young Jeezy sits in a chair.
1992, Bill Clinton is elected. Young Jeezy is literally Young Jeezy. 15, 16 years old. What is your life like, and what hip hop are you listening to?
I think I'm playing Bun B. A lot of West Coast music at the time. A lot of West Coast music. NWA for sure. I'm living with my grandmother, and music is my life. That's how I'm navigating through things, because I'm basically learning through the music. Tupac was my first introduction into politics. Pac was naming out senators. He was talking about district attorneys, and you know, it's like I didn't even know what this stuff was, but it made me go ask the questions. What is a senator? You know, what makes the president the president?
The Clinton years were an era where we saw the growth of hip-hop towards the global industry it has now become.
You got New Orleans entering the game. You got Houston being a big factor. A lot of the content is changing.
Goodbye, Sister Soulja. Hello, Little Kim. This was before music moved to the internet. Hip-hop fans brought hundreds of millions of CDs. The hood made more money than ever, selling records and selling dope.
The music industry is starting to push a lot of the more political artists out. You still have political artists, but they're not within the mainstream.
The superstructure itself decide to make a very conscious shift to not play certain things, to not talk about certain music, right? They would put on the radio somebody talking about shooting you or degrading your character as opposed to Public Enemy.
2000, Al Gore and George W. Bush debate. George W. Bush and Laura Bush wave as they walk down a street. Smoke pours out of the Twin Towers.
After Clinton came George W. Bush. When Bush started dropping bombs on Iraq, rap music was hustling and popping champagne. But underneath all that, the hip-hop generation was gathering political power.
By the time you get to the early 2000s, there is a generation of young people who saw the power and influence of hip-hop could be used to transform the country and our communities. And so they began to organize under the banner of hip-hop.
We had Rap the Vote, the Hip-Hop Summit Action Network, the League of Young Voters. As Bush ran for re-election, Bakari Kitwana and Raz Baraka co-founded the National Hip-Hop Political Convention. 3,000 people from across the country attended in the summer of 2004.
All over the country, all over the world, people were listening to hip-hop music. And we influenced the way people dressed, what they drink, what they thought, the words they said, right? We influenced so much stuff. So we thought that we could, like, bottle that influence, if you will, like, package it and begin to use it specifically to help us in our community to change our conditions.
There hadn't been a concerted effort to bring this power of hip-hop
to the national level. What if we can turn this same type of influence onto electoral policy? It would completely change the game.
2000s.
Early 2000s, straight up out the trunk, you know, paying for my own music, printing up CDs, you know, doing shows and venues that didn't have stages. It was like I was on my grind and I was just trying to figure out my voice and my identity. Like, and a lot of what I was doing was coming from a lot of the influence that I got from Pac. I was like, yo, you know, I'm gonna motivate myself and others in the process. And that was like my mindset. And also watching what was going on with the world.
I remember seeing Hillary Clinton in 2004 sitting next to Diddy at the Democratic convention. MTV had Diddy interview her there. He had his own, you know, vote or die, and Clinton kept talking about how much that, you know, he hit the nail on the head with the phrase vote or die.
And I saw some people walking across the street with the vote or die shirt, and it didn't register then. And when I started to make this project I was working on, the first record I came up with, I was like, I want this to be like a national anthem for the streets. I was like, yo, trap or die. It's gonna be a movement, because I saw what they was doing, but I was like, how can I have my movement in the streets? And it's like, I really ran that whole campaign like a presidential campaign, because what I saw them doing, I just went and emulated that.
Die, nigga. Yeah. Oh. We travel, die, nigga. Mix the flake with the soda. You got young cheese. You still wanna talk low, man. Soft white like Alaska, call me snowman.
Even though most of hip-hop lined up against Bush in the 2004 election, he still won. But the power of hip-hop was felt.
In 2004, youth voter participation increased 9% from the year 2000. It represents Black people and hip-hop mobilizing for power, right? Hip-hop continues to speak truth to power.
Bakari Kidwana, political theorist and author of The Hip-Hop Generation, Hurricane Katrina, August 2005. Water runs through a neighborhood. Strong winds blow detritus. Bun B.
We bear witness to so much trauma and abuse. There's so many people that we know and that we've come across and walked through life with and care for and love deeply, who simply no one will ever know the struggle and no one speaks for them. And that's where that comes from a lot of hip-hop records. It's not even about their own personal experience, but they're speaking for the person that they know cannot speak for themselves. And if you don't say something, these people will have gone through this life with no one ever really even knowing they exist.
The population of New Orleans is 67% Black, so it's not surprising that the face of suffering in that city this week has been largely African-American. The slow response to the victims of Hurricane Katrina has led to questions about race, poverty, and a seemingly indifferent government.
I noticed that, especially in New Orleans, that the response is greater when it's white compared to when it's a Black. And if those areas that are named where people are not having food and water, it's generally the Black population.
Enter Kanye West. Ye was on a telethon raising money for hurricane victims with millions of people watching. Kanye did what Melly Mel, Eazy-E, and Public Enemy had done before. Ye gave us a bar that captured exactly how hip-hop felt. George Bush doesn't care about Black people.
When Ye said George Bush doesn't care about Black people, that was supremely important. It needed to be said, like, no. We know what's up. We know who you are. You ain't fooling us, and we gonna expose you.
Kanye really hit a nerve, and not just Black people, but white people and people of every race saw the failure of the U.S. government to protect its own citizens.
My mom's house wiped out. A few of my homies died in that shit. And, One of my partners, his cousin, like, drowned right behind him. He just got tired and told him, like, just fuck it. Like, go ahead, I'm too tired for this shit, and just went under the water.
Black people were seen on television begging for help. There had been no real plans in the New Orleans area to deal with such a disaster, and nobody came for a long time. It was a horrible situation.
who is the state representatives in Louisiana? As we argue with the things our president should do when the people that are actually head of our state should be doing.
The federal government had a responsibility to prepare, to offer relief to people to out of there.
They didn't. Why do we even look for help if we knew it was help, wasn't help in the very beginning?
George Bush took a plane and, did a tour over the area, and he said something about the FEMA director was doing a good job.
Again, I want to thank you all for, and Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. The FEMA director's working 24.
He must be crazy. They're not doing a good job. These people are suffering. When Kanye said that, it hit home.
The quote, George Bush doesn't care about black people, is one of the most memorable lines in hip-hop history. It landed on the White House like a bomb. Trust and believe, the president felt the blast.
Call me a racist. And I didn't appreciate it then, and I don't appreciate it now. It's one thing to say, I don't appreciate the way he's handled his business. It's another thing to say this man's a racist. I resent it. It's not true. And it was one of the most disgusting moments of my presidency.
George Bush needed to hear that. And he heard it, and it had a powerful effect. And that's how powerful hip-hop had become.
Bush's response was fascinating. The question was, what was the most controversial moment of your presidency? Or something like that he asked him, right? And so it's deep that he's sitting there and that's what he thinks of. You know what I thought of when he's in Egypt or somewhere in the Middle East and somebody throws a shoe at him, right? I was like, well, damn, what about the shoe? You had a shoe thrown at you during a press conference and you still talking about Kanye?
Kanye was, in a moment, just a catalyst for a truth that needed to be screened the way that it was. Very influential, legendary moment that I don't think you forget.
Bush is in his second term. Tell me about where you were in your career.
I was thugging. Shit. I was relentlessly in the streets. You know what I'm saying? I was a totally different individual. And I was trying to get out of the struggle and also, like, taking the music thing seriously. I was getting outside of my circle. You know what I'm saying? Just outside of just the street politics. So I got credit cards and things so I could move around to some nice places. Once I got in the rooms, I start asking the questions, right? I always like to consider myself the people champ, right? And my job is to get the information back to the culture. I connected it in a way that I would say when I was listening to music that Pac and NWA and those guys connected me because it was in the language that I speak. For people who have been following my movement, they're like, hold up, if he's concerned about this and if he's feeling like this is important, then maybe I should check into it. And that's when I wrote The Recession.
What an extraordinary weekend on the campaign trail with two leading candidates for the Democratic presidential nomination campaigning full bore, even though the general election is more than a year and a half away. Barack Obama, who formally announced on Saturday, and Hillary Clinton are pulling no punches.
Senator Barack Obama is watching black political leaders throw support to Hillary Clinton. And why? They have said publicly they don't think America is ready to elect a black candidate.
He was on the struggle bus for the first part of the 2008 campaign, and he did need hip hop. He did need a validation of his blackness and his viability with black voters. And black voters were very slow to warm to him.
Lately, I've been listening to a lot of Jay-Z. I mean, okay. This new American gangster, it tells a story. And he's, as Jay would say, he's got flow, honestly. I love the art of hip-hop. I don't always love the message of hip-hop. Sometimes degrading to women, not only uses the N-word a little too frequently, but also something I'm really concerned about is always talking about material things.
We organized a fundraiser for Obama. I think we raised $250,000 or something with the thinking that we were going to be able to meet and bring the issues of the hip-hop community before the would-be next president. But he wouldn't meet with us. So we didn't give him the money.
Obama was being careful not to offend certain voters by getting too close to hip hop, but he knew how to send us a message.
When you're running for the presidency, then you've got to expect it. And you've just got to kind of let it.
Obama brushes his shoulder. Currency.
that was him telling us, like, go to the pole because I am totally in tune. I'm in the car with you. So I need you to be in the car with me.
He's a real nigga.
YG.
Yeah, bro, that's what I thought, bro.
If you know, you know. Some people might have saw him do that and thought, oh, okay. They might not have known is you better get that dirt off your shoulders. Like, they don't know that that was an anthem.
Obama really did need some shine from the streets.
How did I become aware of Barack Obama? I was sitting in this restaurant we love in Atlanta called Spondivis, and he was on the news channel. And when I heard him speak, it felt like he was talking to and for me. And I was like, damn, like, I've never felt like I can connect with somebody that could possibly be the president. And I would find myself, like, catching stuff he said online or catching stuff that he was saying on the news channels, like, just like, man, like, I really believe in his heart. Like, he really wants to make a change.
I think with Obama, I saw myself. It was very clear that he identified in a black man and he was very deeply entrenched in black culture. I definitely want to make sure I'm not only on the right side of history, but I was active in the moment. We felt like Obama had spoken to us, and we wanted to make sure that the people who maybe were not tuned in politically like we were understood the message, like, hey, you must not know, like, this is a new time, this is a new age, this is the man right here. Y'all need to come on in.
Barack Obama, for me, disrespectfully, I say this about the president, I never had a feeling that he had changed nothing. I literally just knew, like, bro, this man is not about to change shit.
One of my first art projects is literally a portrait of Barack Obama, and I did it in sixth grade. The idea of a black president to an 11-year-old kid, an 11-year-old black kid who lives in Montgomery, Alabama, we were ready. It was like, I was aware, hyper-aware of racism and segregation and things that had plagued my hometown and also our history as a people. So the idea that we were gonna have one in the White House, it was like, oh, like, y'all finna, everything's about to change.
The Recession album was done, and I hear this beat, and I'm just walking around the house, and I keep singing in my head, my president is black. And I look at my man, I say, yo, I'm gonna go to the studio and drop this. And he was like, man, the album's done, you know that. I said, no, I'm just gonna go cut it because I feel it. So later on that day, we go to the studio, knock it out. And I'm like, yo, this is it. This is how I'm gonna end the album. Everybody that was in the studio was like, it sounds good, but if he doesn't win, you're gonna look crazy because the album comes out now and it's gonna be like, you know, almost 5 months away from the election. So I was like, no, he's gonna win. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's gonna win the election.
Young Jeezy fucking elected President Obama. He definitely, like, got more people to the polls with a song. People who never planned on going to the polls. I'm like, oh, you're here because of Jeezy. Like, this, you've never done this before. I got you, but we're glad to have you.
When he won, I jumped in my Lamborghini. I drove through the city. I went on Peachtree, let my doors up. I was playing My President is Black. Everybody was, you know, just, it was like a parade. Everybody was like, we did it, Jeezy, we did it. I'm like, yeah, we did it. And every car, every house, every apartment, it's like, that's all you heard. That's all you heard.
Young Jeezy embraces Jay-Z on Inauguration Day.
The show in love, they knew who I was in that room. The man of the hour. And mind you, nobody know Jay-Z did the remix. I had been, you know, celebrating, so I was lit, you know what I'm saying? I was, you know, about five bottles in, so I might have said some things that was on my heart.
My president is motherfucking black, nigga!
It was bigger than just the song. You know, this is a moment in time for us, and I felt like, you know, this was the one time I could do some good. You know what I'm saying? And we did. We did good.
It's an honor to be here in the White House Library. NPR Music presents Common.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Freedom come, hold on, won't be long. Freedom, freedom come, hold on, won't be long.
Man, the emotions and feelings I had walking into the White House to greet President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama. I was overwhelmed and I had this spiritual feeling that like, what did I do to be able to get here?
We let go to free them so we can free us. America's moment to come to Jesus, come on.
The journey hip hop is taken from the back house to the White House. It makes me think about our ancestors that helped build that White House. At a time where we were enslaved, the progress that we've made as black people in this country, black and brown when it comes to hip hop, is one of the greatest gifts. And we did it, like we did it. It was life blowing, mind blowing. It shook my soul in a good way.
Obama was the first hip-hop president. He understood that the hip-hop culture was here and that it was having great influence, and he identified with that.
Obama just swagged out, dog. You know what I'm saying? Obama just, he be just hooping, you know what I'm saying?
Athletes and hip-hop, we go together. The struggle that artists talk about in their music, we have that same struggle. We have that same grind. You use your life and what you've been through and your struggles, and you try to make that your future. My first trip to the White House was crazy because, you know, this was his first term. He's a hooper. And so we were like, hey, you trying to hoop? So we played horse with him at the White House. I'm not gonna lie, he got a little J. He has a little J on him.
Be doing all this, like, yeah, like he like a, like Obama like an uncle. Uncle Obama, what up, dog? How you doing today, man? You good? Obama was tapped in, bro.
Obama did what any smart brother would do. Hip-hop helped him get elected, so he returned the favor. Obama became the first president to invite multiple rappers into the White House.
You have a black man in the White House, you have hip-hop as a global force, and you have it all together in perfect configuration. They form this incredible phalanx of institutional arts and culture and politics. There was this mutual admiration of powerful forces. And I think it really stunned a lot of people.
That's how you knew that he was your brother, because he did what your brother would do if he got into a good position. Your homie gonna call you, I'm in this big ass house, nigga, they got TV there, well, I think you could just pull up.
I'm gonna keep it a buck, you know, because I ain't gonna do nothing that ain't 100. When I saw Obama inviting all those rappers, I was a little offended. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm like, hey, how you not gonna invite your man? Well, my team gets a call from somebody from Obama's camp, and they just wanted to thank us for all the work we've done. And there was a correspondence dinner happening in New York. And I'm like, yeah, when I see him, we're gonna dap like this, and we're gonna hug like that. And I remember my security talking to the Secret Service, and I just, the whole time, they were just shaking their head. They're saying, you can't be even here. Like, you gotta get off the premises. And I'm like, off the premises? They did a thorough background check on me. I took it personal a little bit. I did. I just was like, damn, you know, like, you know, they don't see me. You know what I'm saying? He don't see me. You know what I'm saying? I had to really, like, sit back and look inward and be like, okay, this is my moment to accept that, because, you know, my past is my past. I can't change that. I can just work on my future.
In April 2016, Obama brought artists to discuss criminal justice reform. J. Cole, Nicki Minaj, Common, Ludacris, Wale, Chance the Rapper, Alicia Keys, DJ Khaled, Timbaland, Busta, Pusha T, and Rick Ross.
So inspiring, so motivational.
White House, baby.
You can see the pictures on the walls and think like, they never thought that we would be meeting in here. They never thought that we would have the power and the voice that we had and the expression that we had in that room in the White House. So the talks were really in depth and we were getting into it. And this beeping starts to go off. President Obama was like, wait, what's that? Wait, what is that? And then Rick Ross is like, yo, that's my ankle monitor, you know. President Obama said, wow, we really keeping it real here. I don't know if they had that in the White House ever.
A bunch of people went in the White House with Obama. We don't know what happened. All we saw is pictures. I ain't seen no list of demands. This is supposed to be our guy. Why are we not privy to what's going on inside?
That is a question that I asked myself when I saw rappers at the White House. What is happening? And you never really get an answer. Are we in the inside or are we just being shuffled along? I know what it's doing for Barack. I know what it's doing for the presidency. Can we affect the policy? There's a lot of people come in that room and do nothing in that room. How do we affect the change?
Obama kind of has tried to play both sides of the fence. He's being a politician. Sometimes he's fighting for us. Sometimes he's using us. One of the most controlled examples really is that Jay-Z and Obama ad.
To me, the idea of America is that no matter who you are, what you look like, or where you come from, you can make it if you try. Jay-Z did. He didn't come from power or privilege. He got ahead because he worked hard, learned from his mistakes, and just plain refused to quit.
It's such a tightly structured, well thought through political ad. And it definitely tries to play with what does hip hop want and what are we not going to give it? He's talking about the American dream. Anybody can make it in America. And that's really not our message when it comes to hip hop.
Hip hop got in common with President Obama is that he got ice in his veins. Like, you can tell somewhere down the line, he know what's up. And that's what hip hop is, knowing what's up. And my mom called me and she was like, baby, did you hear the president shout you out last night? And I said, well, you know, I don't really think he rocked with me like that, mama. And she's like, no, he shouted you out. And she sent it to me. And I pressed play.
In my first term, I sang Al Green. In my second term, I'm going with Young Jeezy. Obama out.
Obama puts two fingers to his mouth and drops the mic.
I'm just like, oh, wow. He said, Michelle likes that when I sing that to her tonight. That there, to me, was that salute and head nod from a distance. Like, I see you, I appreciate you, but you know what it is. And that's why I say you got ice in his veins. Only somebody with ice in their veins would know to give you a nod from a distance and say, I see you. I see you, you know.
Obama was hip-hop. Obama was incredibly hip-hop.
Mean Obama was crazy, so soft-spoken, and such reverence in his presence. Without being imposing, just such an amazing human being to meet, if not for 30 seconds, right? But it was everything I wanted the moment to be. I cherish it to this day.
With the handshakes he used to give to people, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, yeah, like it was just good to see a black president and he acting like us. You know what I'm saying?
I wouldn't be surprised if he had like a little book of Obama rhymes somewhere.
Obama was naturally just a cool motherfucker.
He loves the culture. He respects the art form. He cares about his music.
In 2020, Obama put me on his summer playlist. I wrote Crown when I was 19 years old, and I just graduated high school, and I did not know whether or not my dreams would ever come to fruition. Literally me being like, I'm gonna have to, I love this too much to not pursue it. That's probably why Obama was listening to it. I think that's what it is. He's like, how can I be president? But then he did it. I'm proud of him. Hi, Obama.
Chica.
When Barack was in office and it was like the second to the last party before he left the White House, well, I was like, I'm gonna play the hardest record I got now to see what you mean. Right. And I put on M.O.P.'s Annie Up in the White House.
No, you did not.
And the floor was like vibrating. People went crazy and I was like, oh God.
And that was just incredible because he was playing Mobb Deep and Mary J and like and M.O.P. and like, you know, Black Moon in the White House, and people were really dancing and celebrating. It was like one of those things where you look around and say, do you see what's going on in this place? I know it's like always used, but you just can't help but think like, never thought the hip hop would take it this far. Yeah, 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 cool.
Donald and Melania Trump descend an escalator. People protest.
I'm not a political rapper. Like, my music is not about the politics of the world. Me and Nipsey, we was in the studio working on a project. We two gang members making it out the city, you know what I'm saying? From different sides. We in the studio and the TV on. And this when Donald Trump announced, you know what I'm saying, he was running for president. It's like at the beginning of his campaign, we just start seeing Donald Trump on the TV a lot. Like, you could tell, like, Obama was a good person. You know what I'm saying? How he carried himself, how he talked. And then to go to, like, somebody like Donald Trump, who was just, like, reckless, talking out the side of his neck, racist in a motherfucker, you know? We gotta say something. Nobody trying to get their shows canceled and be going through. We already going through that. So how worse could it be? Let's do this.
Fuck Donald Trump. Fuck Donald Trump.
Headline, yeah, nigga, Trump defends Trump. White nationalist protesters. Yeah, yeah, some very Donald fine Trump. People on both sides. Yeah, Donald Trump will not Trump. Apologize for calling for the death penalty fuck over Central Park 5.
I love them saying it because sometimes I felt like I was out there by myself.
I respected it. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, for the younger hip hop generation, he took a stance. You know what I'm saying? He took a real stance.
It was too catchy, too. I'm like, damn. It was like just as easy as fuck the police.
It was timely. It was unexpected. And I think that's one of the powerful things about hip hop. America politicizes black people by its public policy towards black people. So you don't have to be a political hip hop artist to make a political statement.
Somebody got a letter from like Secret Service, FBI, like the White House and shit. And like me and Nip was all in, they was like talking about the song. Me and Nip was getting banned from performances, college campuses. It was all type of shit going on. I'm like, yeah, I knew this was gonna happen. And you feel me? We like, fuck it, cause it's like we stood up. I believe Trump heard the song. He had to hear the song. But if the White House, if they sending letters out and shit, they was probably like, hey, Mr. Trump, you gotta hear this.
Why was hip hop so fascinated with Trump before he was elected?
You gotta realize around that time, it was a get money time, and we liked the fact that Trump was getting money. We loved that.
I had a song called Donald Trump, and this is the thing you gotta understand. He was the person we equated with money. That's all we ever heard about him being tied to, you know, billions of dollars. And when I made my song, you know, I never made that song from the stance of him being the president, nor did I ever think he would be the president. That was because I was relating it to the money, right? And I think in the beginning, everybody was doing that.
The Trump presidency as a whole did not have time to blossom. I think we were on to something at the very end. And I don't think that there was time enough to kind of get the thing going. People say he polarized the country. I don't believe that. We got Kanye in the White House saying free Larry Hoover. That's powerful to me.
You know, they tried to scare me to not wear this hat, my own friends. But this hat, it gives me power in a way. Let me give this guy a hug.
Kanye hugs Trump.
I love this guy right here.
There are definitely aspects of Trump's personality and actions that call to the baser nature of hip hop. You know, hip hop is a whole range. You have hip hop that's explicitly misogynistic. Some people in hip hop who were used to demeaning women may have looked at Donald Trump and the grab them by the pussy and all that as a feature, not a bug, as they say, as something to be sought after, to have that level of impunity, which a black man will never have.
What kind of connection is there between these two quotes? I'll just grab him by the and there's still you owe me six. If that's a Trump line, then that's a Kanye line.
Mm-hmm.
It is the same line. That it is two different artists' interpretation of the same view. There's no respect for women from either one of those men. And also, the fields that they work in have historically worked against women. I think we're doing ourselves a disservice if we don't ask why that is. The root of it all, honestly, is misogyny and misogynoir. And there's the Venn diagram that's happening here is really something to be noted.
You said I ran over to the Trump team instead of the Biden team. That's just not true.
But you are working with the Trump team instead of the Biden team, and people are giving you heat for it. What do you say to them?
Well, I'm willing to work with both teams, but I'm just working with whoever is willing to work with me.
President Trump is stepping up for a major recording artist, A$AP Rocky, a rapper from Harlem in prison in Sweden.
President Trump has issued his final list of presidential pardons. Other notable names on the list include rappers Lil Wayne and Kodak Black.
Well, he wanted a meeting. He's a really nice guy. He's really an activist in a very positive way. And he asked for a meeting, and we had the meeting, and as you saw, the meeting went very well. Lil Wayne.
I knew Wayne had a gun case. So I seen that and I was like, oh yeah, he politicking. He get a pass.
Lil Wayne posts a photo with Trump, smiling with raised thumbs. Waka Flocka Flame.
So growing up, who was the first president of the United States that you remember being aware of?
Benjamin Franklin.
Do you remember when NWA Fuck the Police song came out?
Yeah, but that ain't my vibe though. Because it's too blatant. Like, I'm not that kind of person. I stand for love, peace, growth, evolving, never change. Barack Obama. All right, I gotta say this.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people, right? Respectfully, that's not black. Barack Obama is not from the hood of America. People want a Tupac kind of real nigga. That's like a Donald Trump. Like, he's a real nigga because he's unapologetic. Black Lives Matter, I just didn't like the narrative, my boy. I just didn't like who invested in that movement, right? Because what the fuck are you talking about? We do matter. Why are we saying that? Like, we know we matter. Why are we pushing that agenda? That's dumb.
Trump called Black Lives Matter a symbol of hate.
Bro, it was.
That when Trump says, quote, grab them by the... That's sexual assault.
I'm not fucking with that at all. I have a mother, I have a daughter, and that shit ain't nowhere near fucking funny. I don't even think that shit should be in fucking headlines. Right? So that ain't nothing I play with. So if you know me, you know me, nigga. I don't play about women at all.
But
at
you all. Rock with the dude who does that.
I rock with policies. I rock with him being a better president than the last guy. That's all it is. Why I like Trump? Because he's better than Biden. And who in this fucking room gonna tell me I'm lying?
So why did you decide to come out and publicly endorse Trump 2024?
That's what people call endorsing. I don't know that. I swear to God, bro. I'm right hand of God. I did not look at that as being endorsing Trump.
What do you want to say to hip hop, to the people about this election in the fall?
Waka Flocka Flame puffs out his cheeks and widens his eyes.
What am I say? Only thing I could possibly tell you is, man, don't make a last-minute decision. It's a lot of people afraid to be frowned upon for living their truth or speaking their truth.
Do you think that Trump lost in 2020?
Hell no.
2021.
So help you God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
Joe and Jill Biden hug and peck one another on the lips. Joe Biden stands at a podium. Queen Latifah smiles nearby.
Over the past 50 years, hip-hop has become as unstoppable force in America. It caught the ear of a child from Newark, New Jersey.
I think we didn't see more hip-hop in the Biden White House because of some very apparent reasons.
And two of the great artists of our time representing the groundbreaking legacy of hip-hop in America, LLJ Cool J. By the way, that boy's got, that man's got biceps bigger than my thighs. I think he's been. And MC Light, both of you, thank you.
One of the most glaring was Biden talking with the Breakfast Club.
If you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump and you ain't black.
Biden is old. He's tired. That man is exhausted. We can't expect him to be out here hanging out with our spies. It's not in his contract.
You've been the vice president for a black president, and I think he just made a lot of assumptions that he got some automatic juice with that he really didn't get.
2024.
Hip-hop has not realized his full potential and influence with presidential politics. I'm telling you, they could register more people, turn out more people to vote, get more people involved than any other sector of our society that I can think of. If they ever use the full force of their influence, I think it will make a significant difference.
We should be asking for a little bit more of a return on our investment. I feel like if people are gonna want to use our voices, if they're gonna want to hear from us and want us to be figures that support or do not support certain things, we need to get something in return.
What do we want? I think that's one of the most important things. What do you want? That has to be on the table before they start shuffling you around and putting you in videos and quoting you and all of this nonsense, because it's just a show at that point in which we are getting played.
Hip-hop was born from rebellion. If we wanted to find any kind of truth, find any kind of meaning, purpose in hip-hop and this election season, we would need to examine the roots of what hip-hop came from.
N.W.A., Eazy-E, you know what I'm saying? Ice Cube, Tupac, you know what I'm saying? We grew up everything they did and what they came from and the marks they left, you feel me, on the hip-hop culture and community. Once you realize, like, the situation and position you in, I start feeling like I got a duty, you know what I'm saying? We gonna take on whatever battle, whatever motherfucker in front of us, whatever the size, like, come on, let's do it. Fuck it, let's go.
It cannot be stopped. New ideas, new language, you know what I'm saying?
You can get any president, you can line them up and put them in an arena. Nobody's gonna recite any words he said for 45 minutes straight. And when you look at people like us, people know each and every word, because that's what we mean to them. We are the voice of the people. Hip-hop is the power.
Written and directed by Jesse Washington. Executive producer, Jay Jeezy Jenkins. Credits continue. Copyright 2024, ESPN, all rights reserved. Audio description by Point360 and narrated by Bill Larson. Logos, The Oracle Media.